First of all, we welcome the department and they could introduce themselves. And we also welcome the President of the Federal Advisor on the side of the committee. Department is in whatever this is the dedication, this is the dedication in the United States.
Thank you. Good morning, honourable chair, honourable members, special advisors from minister, colleagues, and others that are present here. I'm myself and the policy for the DG who has asked for my services today. As an introduction, I'll just allow, I'll introduce myself. I am Alex Hoffman, chief director from the National Department of Housing, and I'll allow the rest of you.
I'm Craig Nguyenya from Legal Drafting.
I'm a registrar from the Racing Case Prince Landing Tribunal.
Ma'am, Ismail Hussain from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Let me will go through the issues that you have raised and the expectations of the committee from the last meeting. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Through you, Chair, I will cordially request you also to repeat, let me say, specific issues that the Honourable Members will clarify on, because I recall to say that we need clarity with regard to Section 9, and in particular, Section 13 and 15. But the three chair, you have also indicated to say that with regard to Section 9, there is a specific clarity that you have requested, that the committee has requested, and also with 13 and 15.
Okay,
so we'll start with now.
Yeah, Chapter 9 is, you remember there was this possibility of us having the additional deputy. Okay? So it was not clear to us what you mean by having additional deputy. You've got the chairperson of the housing tribunal. You've got the deputy chairperson of the housing tribunal. But it seems as if there is a suggestion that talks about an additional deputy chairperson. So to ask for who's here. What do you
mean? Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Honorable Members, with regard to the amendment of Section 9 of the Principal Act, it was actually with regard to the appointment of a deputy chair from the members, as referred in Section 1B. The rationale for the amendment was because that the reason which has been put forth by most of the rental housing tribunal members was to the fact that during most of the proceedings, you may find the situation that the chairperson, the deputy chairperson, is unable to attend the proceedings for that particular day. Further amendment was proposed to say is that for the sake of continuity for the proceedings of that particular day, we rather, let me say, wait and re-amend that particular clause to include, to say, the members present, they can among themselves nominate a deputy chair or a chair to preside over the matters during the, during the proceedings of the particular day. Not necessarily to say, because the principal act, if you can have a look at, honourable members, it provides, let me say, for the appointment by the MEC of the chairperson and also, of a suitable, let me say, person to be appointed as a chairperson, and also, of a deputy chairperson. But for us, it's only for, for us as a drafter to to redraft and to reword it correctly, as has been raised by honourable members before, to say, it should, let me say, indicate to say that in the absence of both the deputy chair and the chairperson, but the honourable members present should be in a position to can appoint, somebody else within themselves to chair the proceedings for that particular day.
Oh, okay. So, members, then it becomes clear this is not a position of a permanent deputy chairperson, as we thought, but amongst the members there. for that interest on that particular day, so that the proceedings of the petitioner can go ahead. Is that clear? Let me let members know. Okay, thank you. Yes, sir.
Chief, the petition is not clear. I understand the explanation. But the way the act is proposed to be amended is not clear. In fact, what we've got in the amendment is exactly what is in the bill. It's just some words are being turned around. But it doesn't imply, and my concern is, the way you explain a chairperson is that at the meeting, say deputy chairperson may be appointed, but the MEC is not at that meeting. This one says the MEC must appoint the deputy chairperson, which means it cannot take place when the meeting is sitting and they then discover there's no chairperson and no deputy chair. So it doesn't solve the problem. And again, at the risk of repeating myself, the amendment is no different to what is in the Act already, so why have the amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just now, I apologize for coming late. I was in another meeting. My name is Bondiwe. I'm from the State Advisor. In Chief Office of the State Advisor. I'm not from Parliament. I just want to explain what is happening in Clause 4, that amendment that is inserted in the bill. What is happening? Yes, in Clause 4. What is happening here is to, we're not amending anything, we're not changing anything as already being presented in the Principal Act. The only thing that we are doing is to reposition this clause to put it where it should be. Because the way it is put in the Principal Act is wrong. That was the only reason for the amendment, just to reposition the subsection. We're not changing anything. If you can look at the Principal Act. Yes. Okay. Yes, sir. Section 9 of the Principal Act uses the composition. It's from the second page. That is Section 9 of the Principal Act. Section 9 of the Principal Act. It deals with the composition of tribunals from the Principal Act. I'm going to read it for you so that you can understand what I'm getting at. Chapter 4, section 9 of the Principal Act. It says, the tribunal consists of not less than 3 and not more than 5 members who are fit and proper persons appointed by the MEC. And must comprise A, B, C. Comprise of a chairperson, and then B, not less than 2 and not more than 4. Of whom, Roman letter 1, at least 1 and not more than 2 shall be persons with expertise in property management or housing development matters. And Roman 2, at least 1 but not more than 2 shall be persons with expertise in consumer matters pertaining to rental housing or housing development matters. And then we have C as a part of the request. Yes. C, a deputy chairperson appointed by the minister, by the MEC, from the members referred to in paragraph B of this subsection. So what is saying chairperson here? That paragraph C is wrong where it is there. Yes. So that's why we are omitting it from the Principal Act and put it as a separate subsection 1A. Because there's no separate appointment for the deputy chairperson. He is already being appointed in terms of paragraph B, Roman 1, 2, or Roman 1, and Roman letter 2. He's already being appointed there. He's among those members. So that was the reason for having it. Sorry?
I said it doesn't arise now.
Yes. Now it's not, we're omitting paragraph 3. the bill is omitting paragraph 3 from the principal act and repositioning is putting it separate in a separate subsection.
Members, and I
would
add at this point the department of speech to the paper as well. We don't want you to discuss it here for the purpose of this committee. In terms of the explanation that we hear in the land, and the department and the secretary of advisory, but it's outside this. As now, what we mean to a situation whereby, in the absence of MEC, there is a debate to the so if it is just sorting out the wedding and all that, it's more technical.
I think everybody is absolutely correct. I think what the department was trying to explain, there's been a series of consultations with tribunals throughout the country, and at least 5 tribunals have raised the issue of what happened in the absence of both the chair and the deputy chair. And that, I think the coalition of the department is introducing an additional tribunal, which still has yet to be addressed with the office of the
so, which means the sooner that your proposal gets done, the better. Because you are going to pass without that amendment. So, introducing a completely new amendment. That needs then to be taken through that process, which is federal advisor. So, by the time you come here, you are on a path because of what you are interested in. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Just clarity, because from what I understand now, it's they're just switching paragraph around. But it still doesn't address the problem then that if there's a meeting and there's no chairperson and deputy chair, these amendments doesn't address that problem. So are they proposing to still put something forward that we should insert into the amendment?
Because
that has not been discussed with the federal advisor. Government must go back to them,
but by the time they come here, it
will be settled. Do you have any problem with that? Chair, I don't have a problem with it, but with respect, I mean, this is the amendment that's been in the department for many months, where they had been put. That was specifically one of the reasons why the amendment has come before us. And now we hear that they still have to formulate something to address that problem.
That helps us because as a committee, we are happy that we don't pass the legislation by the force. If there are still things need to be put here to take out what we sort of under pressure in passing the Randolph Stupid amendment, because it means that you've not made up your mind here in the department.
Thank you, Honorable Sir. I think the issue of appointment, let me say in the absence of a chairperson, a deputy chairperson, was the issue that was raised by the honourable member when we were briefing the honourable member at the previous meeting. It's not the issue of the department. It's not the issue that the proposal of the department. It was the issue that was raised by honourable member saying, so take it that in the event of the absence of both the chairperson and the deputy chairperson, then we rather, let me say, the department consider in setting another clause which indicates to say that the honourable member, that the members of the tribunal present should, you know, among themselves nominate a chairperson for the day to proceed with the matter. It's not the issue of a new clause that was proposed here by the department or the matter. It was the proposal that has been put forward by the honourable members when we were briefing them last time.
Right, it came after our engagement last week, but between last week and today, you haven't met. So introducing it, take your advisor, doesn't know. Yes.
Can I get in trouble, sir? The bill now, that is before you, is the office. It's no longer the federal advisors or the department, it's the committee. So the amendment that you said you must propose is the amendment as proposed by you. You can formulate the amendment even here, there's not a problem. The amendment that is going to provide for the nomination of a chairperson is the presiding officer for the meeting, and in his absence or her absence, the deputy should preside at that meeting. So that amendment, we can formulate it here, we can incorporate it here, as proposed by the committee. But I'm saying it is your bill now. You don't have to go back and bring the bill back. You accept whatever proposing that you're making, and then we formulate amendments. So even in this regard, we will formulate amendments.
I just want to make another proposal. Is that not something that could be addressed by the regulation? Where in the regulation provision is made for whoever is there amongst themselves, they can then appoint a chairperson for that specific meeting.
What is happening to a person at the moment in other legislations? In the meetings of the tribunals or meetings of the committee, the chairperson is the person who is supposed to preside at that meeting. And in the absence of the chairperson, the members present in that meeting nominate a person amongst themselves. So that is the process that is happening at the moment. So in the Principal Act, it's not provided for the chairperson being the person who must preside at that meeting. It's not mentioned here. So perhaps in order for us, for the committee to clarify that the amendment could be inserted here to clarify the fact that the chairperson should preside in such a meeting. And in his absence, the members present must nominate from among themselves the chairperson.
Chapter 13 is actually the issue of the peace of the housing tribunal. But there are orders that get executed, granted by the housing tribunal, which need to be implemented by the court. But they don't get implemented. So what is the purpose of the amendment? Mm-hmm. That help given to the housing tribunal? What is the communication or maybe the working relationship between this department and the Department of Justice to make sure that the housing tribunal do have peace? Because you said that the order should be given to the competent court. So what is the signal for? So it is that current that we need.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. On this particular issue, has been raised by the Honorable Member during our previous brief. We have been in consultation with the Department of Justice, which they have proposed to say, they have received the input from the Magistrates Commission in relation to this particular matter. But to date, they've indicated, categorically to say that they will need actually, receive and also consult, with all the cluster heads within the Department of Justice. And also the Office of the Quality Assurance Officers can consider, to issue the circular, let me say, in this regard. So the issue at this point in time, it has been taken up with the Department of Justice to ensure that, the enforcement actually is taken into consideration. So we have done that on our check with the Department of Justice. Now they have taken up the matter with the cluster head, and of which they've indicated to us to say that the Office of the Quality Assurance Officers can consider the issue, let me say, a secular, let me say, in this regard. So we'll consult further with them.
We are also hoping that the Department of Justice will be here today, except that they said they are not ready to come before us today. They will be ready to come before us on the 12th, which is just before we pass the legislation. because we wanted to hear from them what is it, what kind of challenges do they face in implementing the orders of the tribunal. So unfortunately, we could not. We wanted them to be here, so we can engage with each other in this process. Members, that's the explanation from the department. What do you say?
Part of the reason for the amendment, in fact, as far as I'm concerned, the primary reason for the amendment is exactly the problem that the tribunal has in terms of an order that's been granted that is then not carried out by the Justice Department. And I was under the impression that that was going to be addressed in the amendment. The amendment doesn't address it at all. There's nothing there now that's different from what was there before in terms of saying it's equivalent to an order of the legislative court, but still doesn't address the actual implementation. And quite frankly, Chair, we've had very little dialogue in terms of the communication between the Department and Justice Department as to how to resolve this issue. So it has still not been resolved, Chair. And while I'm just on the subject, Chair, the same one, if I may just ask another question, there's a proposal in the amendment to insert clause 14, which to my mind is no different to the new one, 11A. 11A talks about the tribunal must refer any matter that relates to eviction to a competent court. And yet there's another one that's proposed, the tribunal does not have jurisdiction to get application for eviction orders. We're practically saying the same thing once again in different ways.
I was going to suggest we defer to the Office of the Chief Legal Advisor to address the relationship and why this particular issue was brought in. And after that, I will then respond to Mr. Stang on both these issues.
Thank you, Chair Barker. I don't think I'm the relevant person to respond to these issues because, as I'm sitting here, I'm not representing the Department of Justice. I'm the chief state. I'm the state advisor. I'm representing all the departments, not necessarily the Department of Justice. So I'm not sure if I will be the right person to respond.
Okay, Chick. I'm going to respond directly to 2 points raised by Honourable Member Stang. And again, this comes out of both these points that are coming out purely because, in terms of the consultation held with tribunals around the country. That's one of the reasons why we include a member of a real life tribunal from the Western Cape. And with your permission, Chair, it might be appropriate also to ask him to comment on both these issues. In terms of 5E, it's giving effect to the tribunal, giving the tribunal some key in terms of their action. And I would ask the member from Western Cape to talk some more. And the issue about 5E, the issue of emphasizing the tribunal does not have jurisdiction over eviction orders. That's exactly there because there have been numerous representations to give the tribunal this power, and we cannot do that, so it's to emphasize. Chair, can we allow member of the
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. in relation to, if you're looking at the, the section 5C, the new one, issue spoliation and attachment orders and grant interdict. The spoliation orders, from a practical perspective, the tribunal gets a complaint from a tenant that the person has been, the water has been discontinued or something like that. It's to give the tribunal the power to say, here's a spoliation order, until the dispute is resolved,
reconnect the water. Or a tenant is illegally evicted from a property without a court order. Then they can approach the tribunal. The tribunal can say, until the dispute is resolved, spoliation order, reinstate the tenant into the property. It's not taking sides, it's just saying, put the status quo back where it was until the dispute is resolved.
Or
whoever decides. So the attachment orders, various tribunals feel that that's similar to the eviction. They hesitant because they are not a court in terms of the constitution. So it could get a bit, as they said, a bit messy if you have attorneys writing letters and making submissions and stuff. They are housing and those types of people. They're not trained as court officials.
Okay, I'm sorry, I think there's a misunderstanding there. We're actually not complaining about the issue of violation of detachment orders. What we're saying is, when a tribunal is given an order, the problem is in the implementation of that order, and that is not being addressed. That was one of the reasons why the amendment came before us. They issue an order, put that person in the position they were in before, has been given, but nobody sees that that order gets carried out. That was the one problem. And then the other one, I still don't understand why. I mean, an act is very clear when it says must. Pretty much a shock that the safer advisor can say. I still don't see why we should have the tribunal must refer to competent court, and then again just saying they have no jurisdiction. Perhaps we can just combine it and say the tribunal has no jurisdiction and therefore must refer. So there's two separate issues that have
to be combined. 14, 11A.
And 14, because then 14 can fall away if we amend 11A. Just to, but it's potentially the same thing.
So, this is the third part on both issues.
Can I just clarify this? I think it's a focus issue because I questioned this morning, what are we bringing here if we're still going to have discussions around it? And I was told that we need to discuss it before we make any amendment to this. In terms of your suggestion, when I looked at this, I actually saw 11A and 14. What I was suggesting was let's delete 11A because it's fully covered. It's actually a redundant statement. So, yeah, so we would
probably yes. 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 So we can have 14 and for me to eat. And now what is going to happen now if the magistrate, if the tribunal receive complaints about eviction, so automatically they will refer that matter to court, but they don't have the decision of that matter. So we can only let them
So, remember,
they
are clear now with your request for the
Okay.
Chair, thank you. We got that out of the way. There's just a few other general ones that came about due to the fact that we've now received the submissions from various interested parties. One of the general questions that I want to ask is that we have the jurisdiction, so to speak, to make those amendments. I find that some of these amendments, where a word can be omitted and another word inserted, the amendment proposes that the entire paragraph is inserted. And again puts in the same paragraph with the omitted word and the inserted word. Now, it is standard practice, as far as I know, in legislation, that when you omit a word, that's why they put the thing about the bold in brackets and the underline, that we make the amendment purely to indicate that that word gets omitted and the other word gets added, rather than saying that we substitute the paragraph if all we're doing is changing one word, or two words at the most, in a paragraph. That happens consistently throughout these amendments, where the paragraph is suggested that it be omitted and substituted with pretty much the same thing with a one or two word change. So my proposal is that we as a committee look at that and then make the, what I believe is the correct amendment, by taking the word out and actually saying that that word is omitted and the other one is inserted. That's just the start of the change. Is that correct?
It seems great to us. We don't think that the committee what you're suggesting, but I think maybe it's fair what you're saying, that our service as a committee is focused on how we can be empowered with you. Yeah, I'd like to define it, really, the committee. Over to you, ma'am.
Thanks, Your Honor. I didn't follow you when you were mentioning about the relevance and committee for the committee in this class. Because what is happening here?
You want us to go back to 15?
Yes, in 15.
Okay, that's okay.
Yes.
Sure,
in class 6.
If I could help the chair. Mm-hmm. After every MEC, insert standing and or portfolio committee.
So that's a proposal from the department?
No, coming from the portfolio committee.
Oh, okay.
And it's accepted by the
portfolio. Okay. Okay, we can work on that, Professor. Because what we have at the moment, we've omitted the relevant standing committee and portfolio committee. Hence, we put it in bold. So we can restate that if we still want.
It's relevant. It's not a portfolio committee and or
standing. Okay. Got it.
If we're questioning your deletion, we saw that you're deleting. We're deleting it. So we're asking why.
Okay.
Because it's critical that this get out to be dealt with by the both legislature and parliament. So can you say to us why you consider putting it deletion? What was the purpose of deleting it?
Thanks, Professor. But that was omitted by the department, so I couldn't comment on that. But I can explain maybe, because the current, in the Principal Act, it was the MEC who was making the regulation in consultation or after consultation with the portfolio committee. But now the powers are given to the minister. So I'm not sure whether, even though it's the minister going to make regulation, does he really need to consult with the committee?
That's fine. In fact, the reason why the portfolio committee has to feature is the minister is doing it. And the minister concurs with the portfolio committee.
Exactly.
Because the MEC concurs with the standing committee.
I was going to... Honourable Member Bushten is absolutely correct when he makes that. But the difficulty is, Chairperson, when ordinary people are reading the Act, to refer and cross-refer, it's not so easy. For lawyers, it is fantastic, because they understand the norm, this is the way it's done. And the idea about deleting whole paragraphs, even though one or two words is changed, so that when ordinary members like myself, and dare to say yourself, are reading this, can read the whole act without having three pieces of paper. That's the reason. But we'll be guided by the portfolio committee.
Okay. can we leave it for now so that members can get all the mistakes to then look at the proposal and see to what extent can help each other in the process? And then we'll come back to you, because in any case, before we pass this legislation, we'll have to call again the department so that the outcome of the product, you need to own it with us. So before we take it to Parliament, we'll have to call you in. So we'll look at what is the outcome of the product. Okay? Thank you. I think those are the matters before us and the Department of Housing. What do you want to say?
There's just one more that I'd like to raise.
Okay.
It refers to the amendment of Section 5 and 3 or 3B. Very specifically, the insertion there, provided that a tribunal may in exceptional cases end on a petition, extend the landlord from providing the information. This relates to the food issue. And for the life of me, I cannot think of a single reason why a landlord should be exempted from issuing a receipt, for whatever reason. And perhaps the department can give us some clarity why it was necessary to insert this.
Smuggling something new now. See, when the department comes before us, we give them information beforehand so they come and prepare. But in any case, you are ambushed, you must respond to the ambush.
Why are they able to take care of the ambush? From personal experience.
With your permission, I'll gladly walk into the ambush and defend myself. Chair, from practical perspective, we've had quite a few cases like that. For instance, landlords like Communique or big landlords that use Takeaway ShopRite and Pick and Pay in those areas where they can go and pay their rent. And those receipts that they are issued by Pick and Pay and those things don't include all the information that is stipulated in the Act. And they've said that, okay, tribunal, if you want to rule that we must comply with that, then we'll have to take that payment method away from the tenant to force them to come and pay at our offices, and only then can we issue all the information in the receipt, because they're dependent on the service provider to give all that information. So what happened there would be the tribunal would make a ruling like, all right, landlord, you have not complied with that. But in your case, we will make an exception to say it is understandable that you are doing that because it's for the benefit of the tenants. I think what I would suggest that is a cautionary note is the issue of the wording there and on application. I think that would be an issue, because from our side, what we're now looking at is if you get a clever landlord, a big one.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a gap for me. I'm going to apply to the tribunal in advance to say, I want to apply for exemption, and then we will have to start opening registers. Who has applied and who has not? So I think maybe you should consider from our side, we would make a suggestion to say, just delete the and on application. Because if it's in a hearing, the tribunal will consider whether it was fair and just not to have done that. A person need not apply beforehand. Otherwise, it becomes an administrative thing again. Everyone will apply for it.
Landlord doesn't have this leverage of applying beforehand, and rather the tribunal makes discretion.
I would go along with that. I would also want to just add, and I don't know where this could be done, possibly again in the regulation, that mustn't then mean that if they do have this exemption, that the receipt issued by whatever institution doesn't carry any weight. Because again,
the tenant needs to be protected against various overcharges or things. So it's important that there must be some weight given to that receipt. The exemption doesn't mean that that receipt doesn't exist.
Madam Chair, through you, if I can respond to the honourable member. I think the tribunal is not saying you need not issue a receipt. What it's saying is the tenant has lodged a complaint saying your receipt didn't include everything that's in the Act. And then the tribunal would say, yes, granted. But given the circumstances, they would say your receipt is valid and it's not an unfair practice not to have included all the information in it. So it does carry value.
So the proposal is stand now. Is it helpful in the tribunal?
Yes.
Is it okay? Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Butler. We will be dealing with the social housing, but we want to be dealing with it on our own. We're not expecting you because it's a new legislation, so we want to familiarize ourselves as a community to the business legislation. And it's calling you for us on the 2000 game. We wanted you to input on the render housing. I hope the conversation is okay. Thank you very much.
No, I'm also from the office of the chief advisor. So we're looking at legal issues, and the department is looking at the policy issues. And the social housing is based mostly on policy.
Okay.
So that we don't interfere in the department's care, and then we must both be present, we start guiding the legal issues, they're going to be answering the policy related questions. So it can't be just like the civil advisors alone dealing with the social housing. That is my understanding. That's why I asked the committee secretary to make sure that the department is here also for the policy. Unless there are straight legal issues, then we should issue
the Today we need to move chapter by chapter. First page of the bill speaks about the ambit of the bill. We hope members had time to look at the bill. And all of us, I hope we have a similar understanding also with the department. So this is a piece of legislation is meant to legislate where there was no legislation at all regarding the development of the housing sector, particularly the non-profit approach in terms of providing of those houses. for making sure that the that individual housing are the affordable and for low to middle income. And that's what the undergraduate degree is. And the teacher is also to create the regulatory authority, that is, phasing out of social housing foundation and phasing in the authority itself. So that is the ambit of the bill. And then we go to chapter one, where we deal with the definitions and general principles. Are there any issues that you want to raise in front of that? Don't worry if you go fast, because today we're not going to specialize it completely, but we just want members to come here with the definitions. Are there anything that you're raising on the definition? The same chapter one?
Yes, before chapter one, just a general.
Yes, you're general.
We know that there's some amendments being looked at for the Housing Act as a whole. And I'm just wondering whether this piece of legislation is being considered when the department is looking at the amendments to the Housing Act. There's probably something that's coming before us next year. I know that the minister has been talking about amendments to the Housing Act, which is long overdue. And then perhaps this is something that we should flag to talk to the department about.
Because now we're too talking about this. What about you do? Can you go back to the floor, Mr. Spain? Because the amendments that are in the pipeline, there's nothing concrete on the. On our plate right now, we deal with the amendment. I'm sorry, with the piece of legislation because of the gap in terms of providing. So the amendments that you're making, I don't think they have any bearing on the social housing stuff. Let me hear from the department. Do they want to make a response to that? If you do not come back, you will respond to the response. So you must ask your district button is not here, Mr. Singh. You must search from the onset of the Portfolio Committee. So don't see the department. Don't be tempted to question the other department to respond because you are delaying the process of the committee. Yes.
I think just as you've rightly pointed out, it's a specific instrument to address the specific gap that we have. In dealing with the Housing Act, there's a whole host of other pieces of legislation clearly will have an impact on the amendments and overall of the Housing Act as we see. So clearly, this is a new piece of legislation. Its impact and alignment with the Housing Act will definitely be part of the process going forward.
Let's go back to the definitions, members. Are there any issues that want to raise on the definitions? That is on the page 3, up to page 5.
On page 4, under Lee Parkman, I don't know whether I understood very well. If we can't put a time frame, if we can just open why did that Lee Parkman, the standard Lee Parkman utilized by social housing institution and include the house growth. And I don't understand on low to income to medium income households, those intended beneficiaries, whether we are still going to put the eligibility
I don't understand the chair, but if I can get clarity on those. And also on the sub-current room, if it can be elaborated on this. Because I'm scared if the sub-current rooms are referring to the urban area only, and then the rural.
40.
A lot inclusive.
All right, so those are the questions that the member wants to flag as we go through the issue of low to medium income households, so that the criteria is being spelled out in terms of the subsidy bracket. And then the issue of this agreement, I suppose you took in terms of there are issues in South Africa of non-municipal. So we're hoping that this list holds that you're talking about there, it should be open-ended. It should be stipulated something so as to allow a situation whereby we don't keep the notice forever. So I think that's the first thing that we're using here. Is there any other thing that you want to raise in definition? What I wanted to raise in definition is on page 3, the approved project. We understand that these people will be getting funding from government in terms of doing the development. But what we thought, what I thought would also be proper in terms of this, to ensure that in terms of investment, because it's not a business, it's meant to be non-profit business. So that when people making business out of building houses for the people, that the interest accumulated should be plugged back. We must find a mechanism of ensuring that the investment, as much as people must be able to benefit from what they do in terms of development, but the plug back in this situation so that we ensure that the sector grows. Because the issue here, people get money from government in terms of building both the BNG and this entity and run away. There is no way that people, we should ever find the mechanism of saying particular threshold, so much amount should be plugged back for all people, what was accumulated in the developers. I don't know how, but the plug back kind of, not total investment, because you mean that building is school, not talking about that, but talking about it. Actually, in terms of building houses, find a mechanism. You think that this is not business, but rather development in the social infrastructure. Let's then go to chapter 2, the other issue that we raised. Chapter 2, the ambit here is talking about the different responsibilities. Responsibility of the national department, responsibility of the province, responsibility of the community, the responsibilities of other role players, including housing institutions. So, are there any issues that can be raised regarding this chapter member? Is there everything that is stipulated here clear? Jamboza, please move.
I've got the roles and roles of the possibilities of the national government.
Yes.
On 3.1e, so the minister must create and approve a youth and equal environment for social housing by providing the legislative, the regulatory, financial and policy framework for the deliverance. So I wonder if you can put emphasis that what kind of houses we really need on the social housing. It should be spelled out to into the bill that we want the BNG.
BNG approach to housing.
And then the other one on G. I would like to get an explanation on the purpose of this, because what we're supposed to get in here, we're expecting that we should get affordable rent should be provided on this. So I don't understand if we're saying established capital. I don't think we're here to incur this bill. Is for inferring it with the capital. So if it can be explained more, I don't understand it. And then on J, it's the same thing. It must be emphasize that it must be in line with the CMC. Yeah, with the CMC. And then the housing code should also be. But I still believe that that code, housing code, still requires the agenda amendment. Yeah.
I think in terms of G, the member here is talking about the established capital and institutional investment. Because at the end of the day, you said these houses are built through the World the Housing Bank, which is an agency. And then if you are muting the issue of capital and institutional investment, and we are exposing these people to having houses being built, and then you have houses which will be higher and unaffordable because a particular institution. Thank you, Chairperson. On on section 4, as I've mentioned, that we still have a problem with the housing code that we're having currently. That housing norms and standards, you know, the people will take chances because our norm, the norm that is there, is 30 square meters. And we're referring to the BNG strategy now that relates to 40 square meters. So I was going to suggest that let's try and avoid that that could be taken as an advantage. Let's put BNG there, again. And then I wanted to raise something on this chapter, that there must be something that relates to the special purpose vehicle that is going to obtain land. But I don't know what, I've recorded it here. Okay. No, that is for the municipality. Just to remind Nomke about the roles and responsibilities of municipalities, where on C1 it says to provide access to land and buildings. Now the problem is where do we get the land? I'm sure that is what you number.
Yeah, just to carry on.
Yes,
please. Just to carry on the municipality.
We have got issue. Yeah. Okay, interesting. The interest rate.
6.1.
Yeah. 6.1. Yeah. Here we have got a problem of the NHS which have got high interest currently. Now, I don't know if there could be means of regulating this interest. There must be a way of relating to this. And also the issue of why I'm raising this chapter is because you might find that these institutions, these housing institutions, may be faced up sometimes with the challenges of unforeseen or hidden costs in their operation. And now there's also, on the other hand, there's this high interest rate. Now, definitely, we'll be having unintended consequences as government. So it is important, that's why I have put this point, that it is important to look at it. And then again, all the municipalities I had, of course, but now I was jumping up and down. There is this infrastructure to provide access to municipal infrastructure and services for approved projects in the designated infrastructure. I had a problem on this one. That is why I was raising that special people vehicle. That it is important that we have it. Because we find that those institutions will fall in a trap of buying land. And I don't think that is the people.
What you are saying that in that if you have this piece of legislation, it's important that at the end of the day the special people create an infrastructure for provision of land. Because we can pass this legislation. But what will happen is that there won't be land for building of long houses. What will happen then it means that the institution itself must buy land. Once the institution buys land, the grant goes down because the money is used to buy land. So we're saying if nothing we're passing this particular legislation, the money says this also vehicle instrument must be subtract. So that the land that is there that government has should be ring fence for the people of building houses. So that if we pass this particular legislation, land must be guaranteed available for the people of implementation of the legislation. And the municipal land, the government land won't be at this price in the existing price. It is the land That says facilitate where possible, provide access to guarantee for loan funding from financial institutions. What is it? Going back to square one. The world where the housing bank are facilitating that the housing bank must give housing institutions loans to build houses. But we're saying it must also stand as a guarantor to get house funding elsewhere. What is that? What do we mean by that? We were speaking in time. Yes. So this issue must be dealt with and that we look at. We're not going to accept. We don't pass the legislation if we have this. So we don't want answers from your side, but we think we're speaking in time. Okay. And then we're going to chapter 3. Thank you.
The composition of regulatory authority. What worries me here is the silence about the portfolio committee, the inclusion of the portfolio committee in the system. I'll just make an example. It is silent because it doesn't involve the portfolio committee in appointing the council or the board members, whatever. Like it happened with the SABC, just an example. When they were appointing their board members, it was a portfolio committee that was doing that. They were involved. But we are not.
You're not talking about the appointment of the CEO. No one's involved in that. That's the minister's prerogative. But when it comes to the board members, it's important that the role of the portfolio committee be seen. Because we are establishing a state organ, the regulatory authority, the giving peace, the state organ. So parliament must have a role. So they have to account to parliament. So in setting up that board, it's a public entity. It must be set up in line with other public entities, Chapter 9 institutions. The Chapter 9 institutions, so it must be set up in line with all other organs.
I want to put a correction for a proper way on line 1. If you can say the council consists of at least 7 and not more than 12 appropriate of this speech, I don't understand the speech. I can't be put appropriate.
I'm
But I'm not sure because nothing here is mentioned about the credit out of any of Social Recovery Foundation, whether maybe that will be allocated in terms of your contribution. Maybe it can be done separately. We don't have to have it here, but once that kind of when we come before the portfolio committee on the 11th, we must say exactly what it is that the people are doing in case of the public foundation. Could we invite them also here? Most people need a public hearing. So the president of the region to say what will be the state of our process be. Okay. Let's go to chapter 4.
I was giving to women, which is what you mentioned, but let me say something. 13.3, yeah, that's 3. And it says an institution wishing to carry on the business of social housing must, in the prescribed format, apply to the regulatory authority for accreditation. I was suggesting that business be taken out and just as an NCC mandate. Thank you.
I'm happy with that because you don't have to answer those who put business. Maybe they had an understanding why they put business there. But I think the committee, what it says, it's a building of social housing in particular. We don't see it as a business initiative, rather than a mandate of the government to provide housing for our people. If we work in housing institution to do that, perform that function, they must set formula
understand that they are here to serve the people. But understand we will be able to assist them when they're facing challenges in that process. But when you in there for business, business is business, it's going to be business. But each department has got the formulation that is to make people who are participating stakeholders who are referring to feel comfortable. We come up with that formulation. But we believe that mandate is key to us better. Any other issues, Kevin? Also on the issue of accreditation, one of the things that we are saying here, because this housing, the social housing regulatory council will be the one who does the accreditation, the accreditation itself criteria should be clearly defined. So it would be better for us if we do have that, the component, it is some guidelines to that effect, so that the housing institution should know loud and clear what is expected of them in order for them to pass the provisional accreditation and the time frame. Is it a year to be accredited? Is it 2 years, 5 years, whatever? So those things should be clearly spelled out. We don't have to put it in the legislation accreditation, but it's a separate thing. It letters the committee to do a framework to the criteria and the guidelines of the criteria. The last one is the issue of the management. So what is also not missing in the process is the participation of the tenants or the stakeholders in terms of building housing. As much as it's going to be developer driven, non-profit making, the building of houses from the onset has been said that it provides jobs, it provides huge opportunities, it provides knowledge transfer. So the law must be clearly stipulating that, and also the issue of management of this entity. To have a stakeholder buy-in, people must be involved in management. So they will own those houses, they won't be vandalized, and also the responsibility that they must pay rent. Nothing for free. If it's for free, it will be downgraded, because you won't have money to do maintenance and upgrading of those entities. So the stakeholders' responsibilities must be cleared out. We don't want a book, but somewhere, somehow, that says that everybody's here, there must be a buy-in from all sides. Lastly, the last chapter of the chapter 5. Remember, it's speaking about the fact that this chapter speaks about the allocation of funding to the relevant stakeholders who need to build houses, and how that funding should be collected, and how the funding itself should be spent. Speak about the minister, speak about the PFMA, speak about the Division of Revenue Act, and the relevant entity. So we think, we also thought that this one is straightforward. Unless we'll give ourselves another time to look at it. But so far, it's a straightforward one. Members, that is as far as I was concerned. Yes, ma'am.
May I approach chapter 3? I missed something. I have noted something on the general principles. I was going to suggest that how if we insert another...
Page 5.
On the general principles. When I was cherishing, I didn't see the emphasis on the data capturing.
I think it is very much important that it must be a general rule. They must know that although there are rules that are somewhat, like even into this bill, it must be a general rule that we put, we add from that 9, 10, Roman 11 one to say efficient data capture. They have to ensure that there is an efficient data capture.
Meaning that those who are building houses, you must know how many houses were built. And those who have skills transfer, how many people are getting employed in the process. They're the database that you need when you're building houses. But it should be an ongoing principle that we inculcate in the process of building housing, that we have a clear database that tells us where we are and where we're going. In that way, you are able to see what is intended. That is the end of the kind of briefing that we're making for the members of the committee. This is the beginning, not the end, because with 11, we'll be having the public hearing. We'll listen to different voices, hoping on the 11th to have the municipalities, we invite the municipalities because they have to implement the bill in terms of the 11 stakeholders. We have to invite the provinces. They need to say exactly how they feel about the issue of this bill. We'll invite yourself and invite you. We'll have to invite Social Housing Foundation. We'll have to invite any industry. At this juncture, we're not going to invite if there are members of the public who want to come, we'll invite them, but because we're focusing on this condition right now, we'll be able to do that. We're not hoping to pass the legislation by the 14th, but we're hoping to report to Parliament in terms of where we are. But because it is a groundbreaking legislation, we don't want to rubber stamp it. We'd like to take time and inform that at the end of the day, it is a legislation that we want to come back and be amended. This is a legislation that we just need to cover. That's what we want to do. Any other member want to contribute?
Chair, I was watching the comments that you've made. We've taken notes. Between the chief director and myself, and we'll pass it on to the relevant people in the department. One issue concerns me, and I'd like to maybe make a suggestion to honourable members on how they could deal with it. That's the issue of NHSP. And I was wondering whether it'd be appropriate for the portfolio committee to invite NHSP, first and foremost by itself, in a closed session with the members so that NHSC can not only be interrogated, but can explain to, can share and explain to honourable members of its business model, particularly the interest rate, because it's not something you would explain in the open market, because it impacts on the business of the NHSC. It's a suggestion, Chair. Because I know there are lots of, I'm aware, of lots of different feelings on the interest rate and the energy fee charge.
So, Mr. Moses, we thought that when NHSC is going to be the housing bank, that issue will be dealt with. We have spoken to them a number of times in more than 4 or 5 public hearings on that issue. We did. But we thought now that it is given this new mandate, that also will be captured so that it does a situation that it helps. Because at the moment, when they came before us, it was clear that they were not even making profit in a serious situation. But it's really because we are giving funding to institutions which don't have the reserves. So we will end up not making profit and you end up not able to pay NHSP itself. So then it becomes a housing bank, it becomes completely different. So we hope it's going to be different but final. Because if we are going to be ending up with the same thing again, it means that we will be different. we will discuss the petitions from this side. It's not safe right now. We don't know. We'll talk amongst ourselves and things. But it's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Look at you. You have not applied your mind in saying the new money that's going to be is going to be and how we're going to make it happen. And if that is the case, we're not going to start with the one funding for the time. And the funding support in the decision depends on either state being given new money. Mm-hmm. And the funding is going to take the new money. If it's not there, that will come in. Thank you very much. Remember, we can remain just to have an in-house. Thank you.